something about good days being granted to sensible people. But the grandest of days are enjoyed by those who dare to act unwisely.
God bless Aunt Ashiel for teaching you that, said Erland, taking her onto his lap. It's strange, Kristen, but I haven't noticed that you were ever afraid.
Haven't you ever noticed? She asked, pressing herself to him. He set her on the edge of the bed and took off her shoes, but then he pulled her back over to the table.
Oh no, Kristen. Now things look bright for both of us. I wouldn't have acted toward you as I have, he said, stroking her hair over and over, if it hadn't been for the fact that every time I saw you, I thought it was so unlikely that they would ever give me such a fine and beautiful wife. Sit down here and drink with me.
At that moment, there was a pounding on the door, as if someone were striking it with the hilt of a sword.
Open the door, Erland Nikolausen, if you're in there.
It's Simon Dare, said Kristen softly.
Open up, man, in the name of the devil! If you are a man, shouted Simon, striking the door again.
Erland went over to the bed and took his sword down from the peg. He looked around in bewilderment.
There's no place here for you to hide, except in the bed.
It wouldn't make things any better if I did that, said Kristen.
She had stood up and spoke quite calmly, but Erland saw that she was trembling.
You'll have to open the door, she said in the same voice.
Simon was hammering on the door again. Erland went over and drew back the bolt. Simon stepped inside, holding a drawn sword in his hand, but he stuck it back into its scabbard at once. For a moment, the three of them stood there without saying a word. Kristen was shaking, and yet in those first few moments she felt an oddly sweet excitement. Deep inside her, something rose up, sensing this fight between two men, and she exhaled slowly. Here was the culmination to those endless months of silent waiting and longing and fear. She looked from one man to the other, their faces pale, their eyes shining. Then her excitement collapsed into an unfathomable, freezing despair. There was more cold contempt than indignation or jealousy in Simon Dara's eyes, and she saw that Erland, behind his obstinate expression, was burning with shame. It dawned on her how other men would judge him, he who had allowed her to come to him in such a place. And she realized that it was as if he had been struck in the face. She knew that he was burning to pull out his sword and fall upon Simon.
Why have you come here, Simon?
She shouted loudly, sounding frightened. Both men turned toward her.
To take you home, said Simon. You shouldn't be here. You no longer have any right to command Kristen Lavrin's daughter, said Erland furiously. She is mine now.
No doubt she is, said Simon coarsely. And what a lovely bridal house you've brought her to.
He stood there for a moment, breathing hard. Then he regained control over his voice and continued calmly.
But as things stand right now, I'm still her betrothed, until her father can come to get her. And until then, I intend to defend with both the point and the edge of my sword as much of her honor as can be protected, in the judgment of other people.
You don't need to do that. I can do it myself.
Erland again turned as red as blood under Simon's gaze.
Do you think I would allow myself to be threatened by a whelp like you? He bellowed, putting his hand on the hilt of his sword.
Simon put his hands behind his back.
I'm not so timid that I'm afraid you'll think I'm afraid of you, he said in the same tone as before. I shall fight you, Erland Nikolausen. You can bet the devil on that, if you do not ask Kristen's father for her hand within a reasonable time.
I won't do it at your bidding, Simon Andresen, said Erland angrily, crimson washed over his face again.
No, do it to right the wrong you have done to so young a wife, replied Simon, unperturbed. That will be better for Kristen.
Kristen screamed shrilly, tormented by Erland's pain. She stamped on the floor.
Go now, Simon, go! What right do you have to meddle in our affairs?
I have already told you, replied Simon. You'll have to put up with me until your father has released us from each other.
Kristen broke down completely.
Go, go, I'll come right away. Jesus, why are you tormenting me like this, Simon? You can't think it's worth it for you to worry about my affairs?
It's not for your sake I'm doing this, replied Simon. Erland, won't you tell her that she has to come with me?
Erland's face quivered. He touched her shoulder.
You have to go now, Kristen. Simon, Dara, and I will talk about this some other time.
Kristen rose obediently. She fastened her cloak around her. Her shoes stood next to the bed. She remembered them, but didn't have the courage to put them on with Simon watching. Outside, the fog had descended again. Kristen rushed along with her head bowed and her hands clutching at her cloak. Her throat was bursting with suppressed sobs. Wildly, she wished that there was some place she could go to be alone, to weep and weep. The worst, the very worst she still had ahead of her. She had experienced something new that night, and now she was writhing from it. How it felt to see the man she had given herself to, humiliated. Simon was at her elbow as she dashed through the narrow alleys and across the streets and the open squares where the buildings had vanished. They could see nothing but the fog. Once, when she stumbled over something, he gripped her arm and stopped her from falling. Don't run so fast, he said. People are staring at us. How you're trembling, he said in a gentler tone. Kristen was silent and kept walking. She slipped on the muck of the road. She was soaking wet, and her feet were ice cold. The hose she wore were made of leather, but quite thin. She could feel them starting to split open, and the mud seeped into her naked feet. They reached the bridge across the Convent Creek and walked more slowly up the slope on the other side. Kristen, said Simon suddenly, your father must never hear of this.
How did you know that I was there?
Kristen asked.
I came to talk to you, replied Simon tersely. Then I heard about the servant sent by your uncle. I knew that Osman was at Hadalan. The two of you aren't very good at inventing ruses. Did you hear what I just said?
Yes, replied Kristen. I was the one who sent word to Erland that we should meet at the Fluga house. I knew the woman.
Then shame on you. But you couldn't have known what kind of woman she is, and he... Now listen, said Simon sternly. If it is possible to conceal it, then you should conceal from Lavrans what you have thrown away. And if you cannot, then you must try to spare him the worst of the shame.
You certainly show great concern for my father, said Kristen, trembling.
She tried to speak defiantly, but her voice was about to break with tears. Simon walked on a short distance. Then he stopped. She caught a glimpse of his face as they stood out there alone in the fog. She had never seen him look that way before.
I've noticed it every time I've been out to visit your home, he said.
You, as women, have so little understanding of the kind of man Lavrans is.
Trond Yesling says that he doesn't keep you all in line. But why should Lavrans bother with such things when he was born to rule over men? He had the makings of a chieftain. He was someone men would have followed gladly. But these are not the times for such men. My father knew him at Balgohus. And so it has ended with him living up there in the valley, almost like a peasant. He was married off much too young, and your mother, with that temperament of hers, was not the one to make it any easier for him to lead such a life. It's true that he has many friends, but do you think that any one of them can measure up to him? His sons he was not allowed to keep. It was you daughters who were to continue the lineage after him. Will he now have to endure the day when he sees that one is without health and another is without honor?
Kristen clasped her hands to her heart. She felt that she had to hold on to it to make herself as hard as she needed to be.
Why are you telling me this? She whispered after a moment. You neither want to possess me nor marry me anymore.
That I do not, said Simon uncertainly. God help me, Kristen. I remember you on that night in the loft at Finsbrecken. But may the devil take me alive if I ever trust a maiden by her eyes again. Promise me this, that you will not see Erland until your father arrives, he said as they stood at the gate.
I won't promise that, said Kristen.
Then he will make me this promise, said Simon.
I won't meet him, replied Kristen quickly.
That poor little dog I once sent you, said Simon before they parted. You must let your sisters have him. They're so fond of him. If you don't mind seeing him in the house, that is. I'm heading north tomorrow morning, he said, taking her hand in farewell as the sister keeping the gate looked on. Simon Dara walked down toward the town. He struck at the air with his clenched fist as he walked, muttering in a low voice and cursing at the mist. He swore to himself that he wasn't sorry about her. Kristen was like something he had believed to be pure gold, but when he saw it up close, it was merely brass and tin. White as a snowflake, she had knelt and put her hand into the flame. That was a year ago. This year she was drinking wine with an excommunicated rogue in Fluga's loft. The devil take it, no. It was because of Lavrans Bjergelsen, who was sitting up there at Urengard and believed. Never would it have occurred to Lavrans that they might betray him in this way. Now he would have to bring Lavrans the message himself and be an accomplice in lying to this man. That was why his heart was burning with grief and rage. Kristen had not intended to keep her promise to Simon Dara, but she managed to exchange only a few words with Erlan, one evening up on the road. She stood there holding his hand, strangely submissive, while he talked about what had happened up in Brynhild's loft the last time they had met. He would speak to Simon Andresen some other time.
If we had fought up there, news of it would have spread all over town, said Erland angrily. He knew that quite well, that Simon.
Kristen could see how the incident had made him suffer. She had also been thinking about it constantly ever since. There was no escaping the fact that in this situation, Erland was left with even less honor than she was. And she felt that now they were truly one flesh. She would have to answer for everything he did, even when she disliked his conduct. And she would feel it on her own hand when Erland so much as scratched his skin. 3 weeks later, Lavrans Bjergelsen came to Oslo to get his daughter. Kristen was both afraid and sick at heart when she went to the parlatory to meet her father. The first thing that struck her as she watched him conversing with Sister Potencia was that he didn't look the same as she remembered him. Perhaps he had not actually changed since they parted a year ago, but over the years she had always seen him as the young, vigorous, and handsome man she had been so proud to have as her father when she was small. Each winter and each summer that had passed up there at home had no doubt marked him and made him age, just as they had seen her develop into a grown-up young woman. But she had not noticed it. She hadn't noticed that his hair had paled in some spots and had acquired a rusty reddish sheen at his temples, the way blonde hair grows gray. His cheeks had become dry and thin so that the muscles of his face extended like cords to his mouth. His youthful white and pink complexion had grown uniformly weather-beaten. His back was not bowed, and yet his shoulder blades curved in a different manner beneath his cape. His step was light and steady as he came toward her with his hand outstretched, but these were not the same limber, brisk movements of the past. All of these things had probably been present the year before, but Kristen simply hadn't noticed. Perhaps there was a slight touch of something else, a touch of dejection, that made her see these things now. She burst into tears. Lavrans put his arm around her shoulder and held his hand to her cheek.
Now, now, try to calm yourself, child, he said gently.
Are you angry with me, father? She asked softly.
Surely you must realize that I am, he replied, but he kept on caressing her cheek. But you also know full well that you needn't be afraid of me.
he said sadly.
No, you must calm down now, Kristen. Aren't you ashamed to be acting this way?
She was crying so hard that she had to sit down on a bench.
We're not going to speak of these matters here where people are coming and going, he said, sitting down next to her and taking her hand. Aren't you going to ask me about your mother and your sisters?
What does mother say about all this?
Asked his daughter.
Oh, you can imagine what she thinks, but we're not going to talk about that here, he said again. Otherwise, she's fine.
And then he began to tell her all about everyone back home, until Kristen gradually grew calmer. But she felt as if the tension only grew worse as her father refused to say anything about her breach of promise. He gave her money to distribute among the poor at the convent and gifts for the lay sisters. He himself gave generously to the convent and to the sisters, and no one at Nonneseder had any other thought than that Kristen was now going home to celebrate her betrothal and her marriage. They both ate the last meal at Fru Groa's table in the abbess's room, and the abbess gave Kristen the best report. But all this finally came to an end. She said her last goodbyes to the sisters and her friends at the convent gate. Lavrans escorted her to her horse and lifted her into the saddle. It was so strange to be riding with her father and the men from Urengar down to the bridge, along the road on which she had crept in the dark. It was odd to be riding so nobly and freely through the streets of Oslo. She thought about the magnificent wedding procession that Erland had spoken of so often. Her heart grew heavy. It would have been easier if he had taken her with him. There was still a long time remaining for her to be one person in secret and another in public with other people. But then her gaze fell on her father's aging, somber face, and she tried to convince herself that Erland was right after all. There were other travelers at the hostel. In the evening, they all ate together in a small room with an open hearth, where there were only two beds. Lavrans and Kristen were to sleep there, for they were the foremost guests at the inn. The others left when it grew late, saying a friendly good night, and then dispersing to find a place to sleep. Kristen thought about the fact that she was the one who had sneaked up to Brynhild Fluga's loft and allowed Erland to take her in his arms. Sick with sorrow and the fear that she might never be his, she felt that she no longer belonged here, among these people. Her father was sitting over on the bench, looking at her. "We're not going to Skog this time?" Kristen asked, to break the silence.
"No," replied Lavrans. "I've had enough of listening to your uncle for a while, about why I don't use force against you," he explained when she looked at him. "Yes, I would force you to keep your word," he said after a moment, "if only Simon hadn't said that he did not want an unwilling wife."
"I have never given Simon my word," said Kristen hastily. "You always said before that you would never force me into a marriage."
"It would not be force if I demanded that you keep to an agreement that has been known to everyone for such a long time," replied Lavrans. "For 2 winters, people have called you betrothed, and you never said a word of protest or showed any unwillingness until the wedding day was set. If you want to hide behind the fact that the matter was postponed last year so that you have never given Simon your promise, I would not call that honorable conduct."
Kristen stood there, gazing into the fire.
"I don't know which looks worse," her father continued. "People will either say that you have cast Simon out, or that you have been abandoned. Sir Andres sent me a message."
Lavrans turned red as he said this.
"He was angry with the boy and begged me to demand whatever penalties I might find reasonable. I had to tell him the truth. I don't know whether the alternative would have been any better, that if there were penalties to be paid, we were the ones to do so. We both share the shame."
"I can't see that the shame is so great," murmured Kristen, "since Simon and I both agree."
"Agree?"
Lavrans seized upon the word.
"He didn't hide the fact that he was unhappy about it, but he said that after the two of you had talked, he didn't think anything but misery would result if he demanded that you keep the agreement. But now you must tell me why you have made this decision.
Didn't Simon say anything about it? Asked Kristen.
He seemed to think, said her father, that you had given your affections to another man. Now you must tell me how things stand, Kristen.
Kristen hesitated for a moment. God knows, she said quietly. I realize that Simon would be good enough for me. More than that. But it's true that I have come to know another man. And then I realized that I would never have another joyous moment in my life if I had to live with Simon. Not if he possessed all the gold in England. I would rather have the other man, even if he owned no more than a single cow.
You can't expect me to give you to a servant, said her father.
He is my equal and more, replied Kristen. He has enough of both possessions and land. But I simply meant that I would rather sleep with him on bare straw than with any other man in a silk bed.
Her father was silent for a moment. It's one thing, Kristen, that I would not force you to take a man you don't want. Even though only God and Saint Olav know what you might have against the man I had promised you to. But it's another matter whether the man you have now set your heart on is the sort that I would allow you to marry. You're young and have little experience. And setting his sights on a maiden who is betrothed is not something a decent man would normally do.
That's not something a person can help, said Kristen vehemently.
Oh, yes, he can. But this much you have to realize, that I will not offend the Diefrin people by betrothing you again as soon as you turn your back on Simon. And least of all to a man who might seem more distinguished or who is richer. You must tell me who this man is, he said after a moment.
Kristen clasped her hands tight, breathing hard. Then she said hesitantly, I can't do that, father. Things are such that if I cannot have this man, then you can take me back to the convent and leave me there for good. Then I don't think I can live any longer. But it wouldn't be right for me to tell you his name before I know whether he has as good intentions toward me as I do toward him. You mustn't force me to tell you who he is until it becomes clear whether he intends to ask you for my hand through his kinsman.
Lavrans was silent for a long time. He could not be displeased that his daughter acted in this manner. At last he said, Then let it be so. It's reasonable that you would prefer not to give his name, since you don't know his intentions. After a moment he said, You must go to bed now, Kristen.
He came over to her and kissed her.
You have caused much sorrow and anger with this notion of yours, my daughter. But you know that your welfare is what I have most at heart. God help me, I would feel the same no matter what you did. He and his gentle mother will help us to turn this to the best. Go now and sleep well.
After he had gone to bed, Lavrans thought he heard the faint sound of sobbing from the other bed where his daughter lay, but he pretended to be asleep. He didn't have the heart to tell her that he now feared the old gossip about her and Arna and Bentine would be dug up again. But it weighed heavily on his mind that there was little he could do to prevent the child's good reputation from being sullied behind his back. And the worst thing was that he thought she might have brought this upon herself by her own thoughtlessness. Part 3 Lavrans Björgolfsson. Chapter 1 Kristen came home during the loveliest time of the spring. The Loge River raced in torrents around the farm and the fields. Through the young leaves of the alder thickets, the stream glittered and sparkled white with silver flashes. The glints of light seemed to have voices, singing along with the rush of the current. When dusk fell, the water seemed to flow with a more muted roar. The thunder of the river filled the air over Jurendgard day and night, so that Kristen thought she could feel the very timbers of the walls quivering with the sound, like the sound box of a zither. Thin tendrils of water shone on the mountain slopes, which were shrouded in a blue mist day after day,
The heat steamed and trembled over the land. The spears of grain hid the soil in the fields almost completely, and the grass in the meadows grew deep and shimmered like silk when the wind blew across it. There was a sweet scent over the groves and hills, and as soon as the sun went down, a strong, fresh, sharp fragrance of sap and young plants streamed forth. The earth seemed to heave a great sigh, languorous and refreshed. Trembling, Kristen remembered how Erlon had released her from his embrace. Every night she lay down, sick with longing, and each morning she awoke, sweating and exhausted from her own dreams. It seemed incomprehensible to her that everyone at home could avoid saying a word about the one thing that was in her thoughts. But week after week went by, and they were silent about her breach of promise to Simon, and did not question what she had on her mind. Her father spent a great deal of time in the woods now that the spring plowing was done. He visited his tar burners, and he took along his hawk and dogs and was gone for days. When he came home, he would speak to his daughter in just as friendly a manner as he always had. But he seemed to have so little to say to her, and he never asked her to come along when he went out riding. Kristen had dreaded coming home to her mother's reproaches, but Ronfrid didn't say a word, and to Kristen that felt even worse. For his ale feast on St. Jan's Day each year, Lavrans Björgulfsson distributed to the poor people of the village all the meat and food that was saved in the house during the last week of fasting. Those who lived closest to Jörungard usually came in person to receive the alms. Great hospitality was shown, and Lavrans and his guests and the entire household would gather around these poor folk, for some of them were old people who knew many sagas and ballads. Then they would sit in the hearth room and pass the time drinking ale and engaging in friendly conversation, and in the evening they would dance in the courtyard. This year, St. Jan's Day was cold and overcast, but no one complained about it because the farmers of the valley were beginning to fear a drought. No rain had fallen since the vigil of St. Halvard, and there was so little snow on the mountains that in the past 13 years people couldn't remember seeing the river so low at midsummer. Lavrans and his guests were in a good mood when they went down to greet the poor folk in the hearth room. The people were sitting around the table eating milk porridge and drinking stout. Kristen went back and forth to the table, serving the old and the sick. Lavrans greeted his guests and asked them if they were satisfied with the food. Then he went over to welcome a poor old peasant man who had been moved to Jörungard that very day. The man's name was Håkon, and he had been a soldier under old King Håkon and had taken part in the king's last expedition to Scotland. Now he was impoverished and nearly blind. People had offered to build a cottage for him, but he preferred to be taken from farm to farm, since he was received everywhere as an honored guest. He was unusually knowledgeable and had seen so much of the world. Lavran stood with his hand on his brother's shoulder. Osmund Björgulfsson had come to Jörungard as a guest. He too asked Håkon whether he was satisfied with the food.
"The ale is good, Lavrans Björgulfsson," said Håkon. "But a slut must have made the porridge for us today. Overly bedded cooks make overly boiled porridge, as the saying goes, and this porridge is scorched." "It's a shame for me to give you burned porridge," said Lavrans. "But I hope that the old saying isn't always true, because it was my daughter herself who made the porridge."
He laughed and asked Kristen and Tordis to hurry and bring in the meat dishes. Kristen dashed outside and over to the cookhouse. Her heart was pounding. She had caught a glimpse of her uncle's face when Håkon was talking about the cook and the porridge. Late that evening, she saw her father and uncle talking for a long time as they walked back and forth in the courtyard. She was dizzy with fear, and it was no better the next day when she noticed that her father was taciturn and morose. But he didn't say a word to her. He said nothing after his brother left, either. But Kristen noticed that he wasn't talking to Håkon as much as usual, and when their time was up for housing the old man, Lavrans didn't offer to keep him longer, but let him move on to the next farm. There were plenty of reasons for Lavrans Björgulfsson to be unhappy and gloomy that summer, because there were signs it would be a bad harvest in the village. The landowners called a ting to discuss how they were going to face the coming winter. By late summer, it was already clear to most people that they would have to slaughter their livestock or drive a large part of their cattle to market in the south in order to buy grain for people to eat in the winter. The year before had not been a good year for grain, so supplies of old grain were smaller than normal. One morning in early autumn, Ronfrid went out with all three of her daughters to see to some linen she had spread out to bleach. Kristen praised her mother's weaving skill. Then Ronfrid began stroking Romborg's hair.
"This is for your wedding chest, little one."
"Mother," said Ulvil, "will I have a chest too, if I go to a cloister?"
"You know that you'll have no smaller dowry than your sisters," said Ronfrid, "but you won't need the same kinds of things.
And you know that you can stay with your father and me for as long as we live, if that's what you want.
And by the time you go to the convent," said Kristen, her voice quavering, "it's possible, Ulvil, that I will have been a nun for many years." She glanced at her mother, but Ronfrid was silent.
"If I could have married," said Ulvil, "I would never have turned away from Simon. He was kind, and he was so sad when he said goodbye to all of us."
"You know your father has said we shouldn't talk about this," said Ronfrid.
But Kristen said stubbornly,
"Yes, I know he was sadder to part with all of you than with me."
Her mother said angrily, "He wouldn't have had much pride if he had shown you his sorrow. You didn't deal fairly with Simon Anderson, my daughter. And yet he asked us not to threaten you or curse you."
"No, he probably thought he had cursed me so much that no one else needed to tell me how wretched I was," said Kristen in the same manner as before. "But I never noticed that Simon was particularly fond of me until he realized that I held another man dearer than I held him."
"Go on home," said Ronfrid to the two younger ones.
She sat down on a log lying on the ground and pulled Kristen down by her side.
"You know very well," she began, "that it has always been thought more proper and honorable for a man not to speak too much of love to his betrothed, or to sit alone with her, or show too much feeling."
"I'd be amazed," said Kristen, "if young people in love didn't forget themselves once in a while, instead of always keeping in mind what their elders regard as proper."
"Take care, Kristen," said her mother, "that you do keep it in mind."
She was silent for a moment.
"I think it's probably true that your father is afraid you have thrown your love away on a man to whom he is unwilling to give you."
"What did my uncle say?"
asked Kristen after a moment.
"Nothing, except that Erland of Huseby has better lineage than reputation," her mother said. "Yes, he did ask Osman to put in a good word for him with Lavrans. Your father wasn't pleased when he heard about it."
But Kristen sat there beaming. Erland had spoken to her uncle. And here she had been so miserable because he hadn't sent any word. Then her mother spoke again.
"Now, Osman did mention something about a rumor going around Oslo that this Erland had been hanging around the streets near the convent, and that you had gone out and talked to him by the fence."
"Is that so?" said Kristen.
"Osman advised us to accept this offer, you see," said Ronfrid. "But then Lavrans grew angrier than I'd ever seen him before. He said that a suitor who took such a path to his daughter would find him with his sword in hand. The manner in which we dealt with the Dieffrin people was dishonorable enough. But if Erland had lured you into taking to the roads with him in the dark, and while you were living in a convent at that, then Lavrans would take it as a sure sign that you would be better served to lose such a husband."
Kristen clenched her fists in her lap. The color came and went in her face. Her mother put her arm around her waist, but Kristen wrenched herself loose and screamed, beside herself with outrage.
"Leave me be, mother! Or maybe you'd like to feel whether I've grown thicker around the middle."
The next moment she was on her feet, holding her hand to her cheek. In confusion, she stared down at her mother's furious face. No one had struck her since she was a child.
Sit down, said Ronfrid. Sit down,
she repeated so that her daughter obeyed. The mother sat in silence for a moment. When she spoke, her voice was unsteady. I've always known, Kristen, that you've never been very fond of me. I thought it might be because you didn't think I loved you enough. Not the way your father loves you. I let it pass. I thought that when the time came for you to have children yourself, then you would realize. Even when I was nursing you, whenever Lavrans came near, you would always let go of my breast and reach out to him and laugh so the milk ran out of your mouth. Lavrans thought it was funny, and God knows I didn't begrudge him that. I didn't begrudge you either that your father would play and laugh whenever he saw you. I felt so sorry for you, poor little thing, because I couldn't help weeping all the time. I worried more about losing you than I rejoiced at having you. But God and the Virgin Mary know that I loved you no less than Lavrans did. Tears ran down over Ronfrid's cheeks, but her face was quite calm, and her voice was too. God knows that I never resented him or you because of the affection you shared. I thought that I had not given him much happiness during the years we had lived together. And I was glad that he had you. And I also thought that if only my father Ivar had treated me that way. There are many things, Kristen, that a mother should teach her daughter to watch out for. I didn't think it was necessary with you, since you've been your father's companion all these years. You ought to know what is proper and right. What you just mentioned. Do you think I would believe that you would cause Lavrans such sorrow? I just want to say that I wish you would find a husband you could love. But then you must behave sensibly. Don't let Lavrans get the idea that you have chosen a troublemaker or someone who doesn't respect the peace and honor of women. For he would never give you to such a man. Not even if it were a matter of protecting you from public shame. Then Lavrans would rather let steel be the judge between him and the man who had ruined your life. And with that, her mother rose and left her. Chapter 2 On St. Bartholomew's Day, the 24th of August, the grandson of Blessed King Hakon was acclaimed at the Hauga Ting. Among the men who were sent from northern Gudbrandsdal was Lavrans Björgolfsson. He had been one of the king's men since his youth, but in all those years he had seldom spent any time with the king's retainers, and he had never tried to use for his own benefit the good name he had won in the campaign against Duke Eirik. He was not very keen on going to the Ting of Acclamation either, but he couldn't avoid it. The tribunal officials from Nordal had also been given the task of attempting to buy grain in the south and send it by ship to Romsdal. The people in the villages were despondent and worried about the approaching winter. The peasants also thought it a bad sign that yet another child was to be king of Norway. Old people remembered the time when King Magnus died and his sons were children. Sira Eirik said, Vieterai ubi puerex est. In plain Norwegian it means, there's no peace at night for the rats on the farm when the cat is young. Ronfrid Ivar's daughter managed the farm while her husband was away, and both she and Kristen were glad to have their minds and hands full of cares and work. Everyone in the village was struggling to gather moss in the mountains and to cut bark because there was so little hay and almost no straw. And even the leaves that were collected after midsummer were yellow and withered. On Holy Cross Day, when Sira Eirik carried the crucifix across the fields, there were many in the procession who wept and loudly entreated God to have mercy on men and beasts. 1 week after Holy Cross Day, Lavrans Björgolfsson came home from the Ting. It was long past everyone's bedtime, but Ronfrid was still sitting in her weaving room. She had so much to do these days that she often worked into the night at her weaving and sewing. And Ronfrid always felt so happy in that building. It was thought to be the oldest one on the farm. They called it the women's house, and people said it had stood there since heathen times. Kristen and the maid named Astri were with Rongfrid, spinning wool next to the open hearth. They had been sitting there, sleepy and silent, for a while when they heard the hoofbeats of a single horse. A man came riding at great speed into the wet courtyard. Astrid went to the entryway to look outside. She returned at once, followed by Lavrans Björgulfsson. Both his wife and daughter saw at once that he was quite drunk. He staggered and grabbed hold of the smoke vent pole as Ronfrid removed his soaking wet cape and hat and unfastened his scabbard belt. "What have you done with Halvdan and Kolbein?" she asked apprehensively. "Did you leave them behind along the road?"
"No, I left them behind at Lotsgard," he said, laughing a bit. "I had such an urge to come home. I couldn't rest before I did. They went to bed down there, but I took Guldsvein and raced homeward. Go and find me some food, Astri," he said to the maid. "Bring it over here so you won't have to walk so far in the rain. But be quick. I haven't eaten since early this morning."
"Didn't you have any food at Lopsgard?" asked his wife in surprise. Lavrans sat down on a bench and rocked back and forth, chuckling.
"There was food enough, but I didn't feel like eating while I was there. I drank with Sigurd for a while, but then I thought I might just as well come home at once instead of waiting till morning."
Astri brought ale and food. She also brought dry shoes for her master. Lavrans fumbled as he tried to unfasten his spurs, but he kept lurching forward.
"Come over here, Kristen," he said, "and help your father. I know you'll do it with a loving heart. Yes, a loving heart. Today, at least."
Kristen obeyed and knelt down. Then he put his hands on either side of her head and tilted her face up.
"You know very well, my daughter, that I want only what is best for you. I wouldn't cause you sorrow unless I saw that I was saving you from many sorrows later on. You're still so young, Kristen. You only turned 17 this year, 3 days after St. Halvard's Day. You're 17.
Kristen had finished her task. Somewhat pale, she got up and sat down on her stool by the hearth again. The intoxication seemed to wear off to some extent as Lavrans ate. He answered questions from his wife and the servant girl about the ting. Yes, it had been magnificent. They had bought grain and flour and malt, some in Oslo and some in Tunsberg. They were imported goods. Could have been better, but could have been worse too. Yes, he had met many kinsmen and acquaintances and brought greetings from them all. He simply sat there, the answers dripping from him.
"I talked to Sir Andres Gudmundsson," he said when Astrid had gone. "Simon has celebrated his betrothal to the young widow at Manvik. The wedding will be at Difrin on St. Andreas' Day. The boy made the decision himself this time. I tried to avoid Sir Andres in Tunsberg, but he sought me out. He wanted to tell me that he was absolutely certain that Simon saw Fru Hofrid for the first time around midsummer this year. He was afraid I'd think that Simon was planning on this wealthy marriage when he broke off with us."
Lavrans sat for a moment, laughing mirthlessly.
"You see, this honorable man was terribly afraid that we'd think something like that of his son."
Kristen sighed with relief. She thought that this was what her father was so upset about. Maybe he had been hoping all along that it would still take place, the marriage between Simon Andresen and herself. At first, she had been afraid that he had inquired about her behavior down south in Oslo. She stood up and said goodnight. Then her father told her to stay a while.
"I have some other news," said Lavrans. "I might have kept it from you, Kristen, but it's better that you hear it. Here it is. That man you have set your heart on, you must try to forget."
Kristen had been standing with her arms at her sides and her head bowed. Now she raised her head and looked into her father's face. Her lips moved, but she couldn't manage a single audible word. Lavrans turned away from his daughter's gaze. He threw out his hand. You know, I wouldn't be against it if I sincerely believe that it would be to your benefit, he said.
What news have you heard on this journey, father? Asked Kristen, her voice steady.
Erlan Nikolausen and his kinsman Sir Munan Bardsson came to me in Tunsburg, replied Lavrans. Sir Munan asked me for your hand on Erlan's behalf, and I told him no.
Kristen stood in silence for a moment, breathing heavily. Why won't you give me to Erlan Nikolausen? She asked.
I don't know how much you know about this man you want for your husband, said Lavrans. If you don't know the reason yourself, it won't be pleasant for you to hear it from my lips.
Is it because he was excommunicated and outlawed? Asked Kristen in the same tone as before.
Do you know what it was that caused King Håkon to drive his close kinsman from his court? And do you know that he was banned by the church in the end because he defied the archbishop's decree? And that he did not leave the country alone?
Yes, said Kristen. Her voice grew uncertain. I know, too, that he was 18 years old when he met her, his mistress.
That's how old I was when I was married, said Lavrans. When I was young, we reckoned that from a man's 18th birthday, he could answer for himself and be responsible for his own welfare and that of others.
Kristen stood in silence.
You called her his mistress. That woman he has lived with for 10 years and who has borne him children, said Lavrans after a moment. I would regret the day I sent my daughter off with a husband who had lived openly with a mistress for years on end before he married. But you know it was more than merely living in sin.
You weren't so harsh to judge Fru Asild and Herr Björn, said Kristen quietly.
Yet I cannot say I would willingly join families with them, replied Lavrans.
Father, said Kristen, have you and mother been so without sin all your lives that you dare judge Erlan so harshly?
God knows, replied Lavran sternly, that I judge no man to be a greater sinner than I am myself. But one cannot expect me to give my daughter to any man who wishes to ask for her, just because we all need God's mercy.
You know that's not what I meant, said Kristen hotly. Father, mother, you were both young once. Don't you remember that it's not easy to guard yourself against the sin that love provokes?
Lavrans turned blood red. No, he said curtly.
Then you don't know what you're doing, screamed Kristen in despair, if you separate Erlan Nikolausen and me.
Lavrans sat down on the bench again. You're only 17 years old, Kristen, he continued. It might be that the two of you are more fond of each other than I thought, but he's not so young a man that he shouldn't have realized. If he were a good man, then he wouldn't have approached such a young, immature child as you with words of love. He seems to have considered it trivial that you were promised to someone else. But I will not betroth my daughter to a man who has two children with another man's true wife. Don't you realize that he has children? You're too young to understand that such an injustice breeds endless quarrels and strife among kinsmen. The man cannot abandon his own offspring. Neither can he claim them. It will be difficult for him to find a way to present his son in society, or to marry off his daughter to anyone other than a servant boy or a smallholder. And his children would not be made of flesh and blood if they didn't despise you and your children. Don't you see, Kristen? Sins like this. God may forgive such sins more readily than many others, but they damage a lineage so severely that it can never be redeemed. I was thinking about Björn and Asild myself. There stood that Munan, her son. He was dripping with gold, and he sits on the king's council. He and his brothers control the inheritance from their mother, and yet he hasn't visited Asild in her poverty in all these years. Yes, this was the man that your friend chose as his spokesman. No, I say no. You shall never be part of that family as long as my head is above ground.
Kristen covered her face with her hands and burst into tears. Then I'll pray to God, night and day, to take me away from here if you won't change your mind.
It's useless to discuss this any more tonight, said her father, aggrieved. You may not believe it, but I must watch over you in such a way that I can answer for the consequences. Go to bed now, child.
He held out his hand to her, but she refused to acknowledge it and went sobbing out of the room. The parents sat for a moment in silence. Then Lavran said to his wife,
Would you mind bringing some ale over here? No, bring some wine. I'm tired.
Ronfrid did as he asked. When she returned with the tall goblet, her husband was sitting with his face in his hands. He looked up and then stroked his hands over the wimple covering her head and down along her arms.
Poor thing. Now you've gotten wet. Drink a toast to me, Ronfrid.
She placed the goblet to her lips.
No. Drink with me, said Lavrans vehemently, pulling his wife down onto his lap.
Reluctantly, she yielded to him.
Lavran said, You'll stand behind me in this matter, won't you, my wife? It will be best for Kristen if she realizes from the very start that she must put this man out of her mind.
It will be hard for the child, said Ronfrid.
Yes, I know that, replied Lavrans.
They sat in silence for a while, and then Ronfrid asked, What does he look like, this Erlon of Husaby?
Oh, said Lavrans, hesitating. He's a handsome fellow, in a way. But he doesn't look as if he were much good for anything but seducing women.
They were silent again for a while, and then Lavrans went on,
He has handled the great inheritance he received from Sir Nikolaus in such a way that it is much reduced. I haven't struggled and striven to protect my children for a son-in-law like that.
Ronfrid paced the floor nervously. Lavrans went on,
I was most displeased by the fact that he tried to bribe Kolbein with silver. He was supposed to carry a secret letter from Erlon to Kristen.
Did you look at the letter? Asked Ronfrid.
No, I didn't want to, said Lavrans crossly. I tossed it back to Sir Munon and told him what I thought of such behavior. He had put his seal on it, too. I don't know what to make of such childish pranks. Sir Munon showed me the seal, said it was King School's privy seal that Erland had inherited from his father. He thought I ought to realize that it's a great honor that they would ask for my daughter. But I don't think that Sir Munon would have presented this matter on Erlon's behalf with such great warmth if he hadn't realized that, with this man, the power and honor of the Husaby lineage, won in the days of Sir Nikolaus and Sir Bard, are now in decline. Erlon can no longer expect to make the kind of marriage that was his birthright.
Ronfrid stopped in front of her husband.
I don't know whether you're right about this matter or not, my husband. First, I ought to mention that, in these times, many a man on the great estates has had to settle for less power and honor than his father before him. You know quite well yourself that it's not as easy for a man to gain wealth, whether from the land or through commerce, as it was before.
I know, interrupted her husband impatiently. All the more reason to handle with caution what one has inherited.
But his wife continued,
There is also this. It doesn't seem to me that Kristen would be an unequal match for Erlon. In Sweden, your lineage is among the best. Your grandfather and your father bore the title of knight in this country. My distant ancestors were barons, son after father for many hundreds of years down to Ivar the Old. My father and my grandfather were sheriffs of the county. It's true that neither you nor Trond has acquired a title or land from the crown. But I think it could be said that things are no different for Erlon Nikolausen than for the two of you.
It's not the same thing, said Lavrans vehemently. Power and a knight's title lay just within reach for Erlon, and he turned his back on them for the sake of whoring. But I see now that you're against me too. Maybe you think like Osman and Tron, that it's an honor for me that these noblemen want my daughter to be one of their kinswomen.
I told you, said Ronfrid rather heatedly, that I don't think you need to be so offended and afraid that Erlon's kinsmen will think they're condescending in this matter. But don't you realize one thing above all else? That gentle, obedient child had the courage to stand up to us and reject Simon Dara. Haven't you noticed that Kristen has not been herself since she came back from Oslo? Don't you see that she's walking around as if she had just stepped out from the spell of the mountain? Don't you realize that she loves this man so much that if you don't give in, a great misfortune may befall us?
What do you mean by that? Asked Lavrans, looking up sharply.
Many a man greets his son-in-law and does not know it, said Ronfrid. Her husband seemed to stiffen. He slowly turned white in the face.
And you are her mother, he said hoarsely. Have you seen such certain signs that you dare accuse your own daughter of this?
No, no, said Ronfrid quickly. I didn't mean what you think. But no one can know what may have happened or is going to happen. Her only thought is that she loves this man. That much I've seen. She may show us someday that she loves him more than her honor or her life.
Lavrans leaped up. Have you taken leave of your senses? How can you think such things of our good, beautiful child? Nothing much can have happened to her there with the nuns. I know she's no milkmaid who gives up her virtue behind a fence. You must realize that she can't have seen this man or spoken to him more than a few times. She'll get over him. It's probably just the whim of a young maiden. God knows it hurts me dearly to see her grieving so, but you know that this has to pass with time. Life, you say, an honor. Here at home on my own farm, I can surely protect my own daughter. And I don't believe any maiden of good family and with an honorable and Christian upbringing would part so easily with her honor or her life. No, this is the kind of thing people write ballads about. I think when a man or a maiden is tempted to do something like that, they make up a ballad about it, which helps them. But they refrain from actually doing it. Even you, he said, stopping in front of his wife. There was another man you would rather have had, back when the two of us were married. What kind of situation do you think you'd have been in if your father had let you make up your own mind?
Now it was Ronfrid's turn to grow pale as death. Jesus and Maria, who told you?
Sigurd of Loptsgard said something about it, right after we moved here to the valley, said Lavrans. But give me an answer to my question. Do you think you would have been happier if Ivar had given you to that man?
His wife stood with her head bowed low. That man, she said almost inaudibly, didn't want me. A shudder seemed to pass through her body. She struck at the air with a clenched fist. Then her husband gently placed his hands on her shoulders.
Is that it?
He said, overcome. And a profound and sorrowful amazement filled his voice.
Is that it? For all these years? Have you been harboring sorrow for him, Ronfrid?
She was shaking, but she did not answer.
Ronfrid? He said in the same tone of voice. But after Björgulf died, and when you wanted me to be toward you in a way that I couldn't, were you thinking about the other man then?
He whispered, frightened and confused and tormented. How can you think such things? She whispered, on the verge of tears. Lavrans leaned his forehead against his wife's and turned his head gently from side to side.
I don't know. You're so strange. Everything you said tonight. I was afraid, Ronfrid. I don't understand women very well.
Ronfrid smiled wanly and put her arms around his neck. God knows, Lavrans. I begged you because I loved you more than is good for a human soul. And I hated the other man so much that I knew it made the devil happy.
I have loved you, dear wife, with all my heart, said Lavrans tenderly, kissing her. Do you know that? I thought we were so